welcome to Webcams TV. I'm your host, as always, Corey Fowler. Joining me today, from the far side, Pranav.
Hey, guys.
You remember nice Pranav here. From some past shows, including Twitter Bootstrap,
right.
NBC,
Identity.
Identity.
I had a wig at one point in time for the Halloween show. I almost killed you with the sword, but
it would have been terrible. And sitting here in the middle, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
So we actually have a really interesting show, and it's going to lead up from last week's show, which was all about web jobs. And web jobs are this awesome new feature, as you found out last week. But you guys have, like, put some crazy syntactic sugar on top of web jobs and a couple other Azure services. Am I right?
True.
Cool.
Well, I like the word syntactic sugar.
Like. Syntactic sugar.
It's all about making it easy to use Azure. Like, that's what our goal is, basically.
Excellent. So now that I've kind of alluded to it, what are you going to be showing us today?
So today we're going to be talking to you about the Jobs SDK. And the whole goal behind our Jobs SDK is sort of make it easier for you to write applications and use Azure. So I'm going to reference this post that Scott Hanselman just did about web jobs. And what he's trying to do over here basically is, you know, we have these programs that we've been always used to writing. Like, this is an example of an image processing application that I have. And I was able to write a console exe, which reads in a stream, processes, and outputs a stream. But now I want to push this code up and run it in Azure and sort of scale it in Azure and stuff. So how do I do it? Like, today I have a lot of ceremonies is what we like to call to do it. Like, you have to download a bunch of SDKs, you have to create new projects, and you have to learn an entirely new paradigm on how do you read and write blobs and how do you read and write queues and sort of build applications around it. So what we are trying to solve is, like, you only know how do you want to do image processing. And that's what you care about. So we want to try and remove all these ceremonies away from your application and make it easier for you to push this code up in Azure. So once we use our SDK, this is the code that it looks like basically to write that same image processing. And I'm going to show you more in details, like, how do we get started with this SDK and what sort of scenarios are we targeting. So that's basically what we're going to show today.
I love this example because it reminds me of the guestbook app in the 90s. And everyone had one, and you uploaded your picture, and the picture was whatever size you uploaded.
Right.
So you end up, like, breaking their website design and everything. So this code is like, we've modernized it, and we now thumbnail those pictures.
Exactly.
And now we're cloudifying it and uploading those pictures off to Windows Azure.
I like the word cloudifying.
Cloudify.
So Mike over here is pretty much the creator of this SDK. And Mike, how did this SDK sort of come around to being what it is today?
Well, so I was volunteering for a community organization. They just needed some file and batch processing, nothing too tricky. But I had my little console app and my little local databases and stuff like that, and they'd give me a file, I'd run it, and I'd give them the results. And then at one point they said, hey, you know, can we run this on our machines instead of emailing you the file every time? And deployment is hard. You know, to get my local program and databases and things running on their machine, it was really hard. And it turned out it was actually easier to get it running up in Windows Azure and run it in the cloud than it would have been deployed to their machine.
Wow.
And so, you know, once I started having this batch processing running in the cloud, it's like, you know what? I want to make this easy. Because there were still some bumps to work through. You know, I wanted to make it really easy to access blobs and tables. And and when the processing didn't go do the right thing, you know, how to diagnose it and if an exception is thrown, how to find it and stuff like that. So really just trying to solve this problem for this community organization drove me to the cloud and really made an emphasis for make it easy and have really good diagnostics for when things go wrong.
I think that's a great point that Mike made, like, you know, apart from being simple and making it easy to use Azure, like, we are also adding this diagnostics and monitoring features that you'll get without having you to write any code around it. So let's see how do we get started with our SDK. So I have a solution, and I'm going to add a new project into my solution. I'm going to go to the cloud node. I'm going to create an application called Windows Azure Web Jobs Console App. And so what I'm showing you over here is an extension that we have built and shipped outside of Visual Studio, and it's being distributed to Sitewaffle. And so this is a prototype tooling of what we think is going to be the tooling that we'll build for web jobs and the SDK around it. So if I create a new project, I get some sample code, which is telling me how do I get started with the Jobs SDK. So in my main program, I have a host. And you can think of host as a container for all your functions. So if you're writing an image processing application, here's what your resize and watermark functions would be. And this process queue function sort of does two things, and which is the basics of our SDK. And the basics of our SDK is all about how do you trigger and how do you bind. And so this example demonstrates a flow which is something like this. As soon as this program runs, it's going to start listening for any incoming messages on a queue called input text. And as soon as a message arrives on this queue input text, this function is going to get triggered. It's going to get the value of the input text, and it's going to bind to this blob, which has a path of container name slash blob name. And it's going to bind the blob to a text writer. So this is where the binding comes in, where you are binding blobs to text writers, because as app developers, you know what text writers are, you know what streams are, and you can operate on it, but you don't know what blob is, basically.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing, because if you think about it, like, if you're used to doing Azure development, there's like a connection string that you need for storage, and I'm guessing that's a storage queue, not a service bus queue?
Exactly.
So you have all the stuff that you need to set up,
right?
And then you actually have this big lot of code to bring all that in.
Right.
This is really simple and clean. Like, you literally have four lines of code there that are specific to what you're doing in the cloud. And everything else is like what you typically would have done.
Exactly. So I'm going to put an Azure storage connection string in my application. So in my app config, I'm going to put this connection string over here. So we use two kinds of connections, like one for the runtime where we do all the logging and infrastructure and bookkeeping for all functions that are running, and one for data, which is where your user data or your application data is basically staying. This is where you would store your pictures, any such information. In my sample, I'm just using the same connection string for both. You could choose to use a different one if you wanted to. And I'm going to run this exe over here. So at this point, the exe is just running. The job host gets instantiated. And I'm going to trigger a message on the queue. So I have this tool called Azure Storage Explorer, which you can use and connect to your storage accounts. And then you can create queues. You can send messages on the queues, and so on and so forth. OK. So let's create a new queue. Input text. I'm going to push a message on this queue called Hello Web Campers.
Yeah. Excellent.
I'm going to say create message. And in my console.exe output, basically now you would see that the SDK would figure out that there's a message on the queue. It's going to call this process queue function, which I have in my application. And then this process queue function will basically read the message on the queue, and write it to the blob itself. Mm-hmm. So if I go back to my Storage Explorer, I'm going to look for a blob called container name slash blob name. So if I go to blobs, and I do refresh.
That's a very meta blob.
So here's the blob name that the framework just created for me. And I can see the actual value that I wrote. So hello, campers.
Excellent.
So if I just sort of recap what I just did in these sort of three lines of code, I read from a queue and I wrote to a blob, mm-hmm. without having to understand what the intrinsics are of reading from a queue and writing to a blob and stuff.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to the example I started out with, is I know how to compress an image, but I don't know how to push it to blob or write such an application.
Yeah, because if you're going to go and write this against the SDK, you'd be going out and getting a blob client,
right?
Grabbing the container,
right.
Getting a blob, uploading it, and then
exactly.
So it's all down in one simple attribute, which is just absolutely incredible.
And the beauty of the system is, like, we're not sort of reinventing the wheel and going out. Like, we're still binding to core BCL types of text writers and readers, and we're still using the storage SDKs or the storage libraries underneath the covers. Like, we still pull in like the configuration manager, which you would normally use while talking to storage queues and blobs itself. So this is like a good starting example of what are the basics of the SDK. There's a concept of triggers, there's a concept of binding, and there's a concept of execution. Like, how do you want to process this function? let's take it up a level a bit. So this is an example of a program where I'm going to do image resizing. And the flow that I'm going to follow basically is I'm going to, like, a user has an application, which is an MVC app. They come and upload a picture. They store the picture in a blob. And now as soon as they store a picture in a blob, you want to do some sort of post-processing on it. And the post-processing I'm going to do is basically I'm going to take that picture, I'm going to do some sort of resize onto it, and I'm going to add some sort of watermark to it, and I'm going to store it in the blob. So there's some orchestration happening where I listen for some new blob coming in, and then I take that input for the images, and then I process, write to another blob, and I do watermark and write to another blob itself. So my main function kind of looks the same. I new up a job host the same way. And I have two functions, like resize and watermark. So resize is listening on any incoming input on a blob container called images1-input. And it's going to write to a container called images1-output. And you would notice that I'm using curly name curly. And this is an example of like what we have in MVC called model binding to parameters and stuff. So if you notice, like, container can have any file name, like foo.jpg, bar.jpg. So I don't care about the name of the file in the blob container. All I care about is some value that's coming in.
Yeah.
And we can be very fancy in this model binding system where we can have some sort of intrinsics around, like, name dot, like, you know, name two. So if you have a file called thumbnail underscore foo.jpg, then I'll get it split out into name will be thumbnail and name two will be like foo.jpg and stuff. Mm. So I can do very fancy things around it. And then, so resize writes to a blob container called images1-output, and then watermark is gonna read from images1-output and then write to images2-output. Mm. So if you look at the amount of code that I'm writing basically to do this processing is again very minimal. I don't have to read about like blobs and how to process blobs. All I care about, how do I do the processing of it?
And it's still nice and clean because your code there is basically just, you know, taking your parameters down a line to be able to have the attribute on the same line as
right.
the rest of your code. So it's nice and clean and easy to do.
Exactly. So I can go back to my storage. I can go to my blobs. And so image1-input were the two images that I had. So I'm going to delete this, and I'm just going to upload a new one. Here are my fancy pictures. This is what I love to do. Okay. And then I'm going to start running this exe. So I already have the storage accounts in my connection string.
So while this is loading up, you mentioned that, you know, it's a very simplistic interface of going in and using storage in, like, without having to go through a lot of the different song and dance. One of the big things on the Migrate Windows Azure IDEA site is please make the storage SDK more testable. Are there ways to hook in tests throughout this framework as well?
Yeah.
And it could be a simple yes, no for now, because I just saw that our demo came through.
Well, I can give you a really quick answer to that. So can you go back to the source code? So the great thing here is it's all your code. So this is just this resize function, for example. It's just a normal C# function. You could call it directly from a unit test. And it's a lot easier to mock a web image or a text writer or the BCL types yeah. than it is to mock cloud blob container and things like that.
Yeah.
So by model binding to these simple types and exposing these, they're just vanilla C# functions that you can directly call. I mean, the presence of those attributes like blob input, yeah. blob output don't interfere. So you can have all your logic there and call it directly from your unit tests, a lot like you do with MVC and unit testing controllers mm-hmm. and actions.
And controllers and actions, yeah. right. exactly.
Cool.
So if I were to go back to my Storage Explorer and check image to output and open the image up. So if you look at the bottom right is where a little watermark is on the black and says the Web Jobs SDK. So let's talk about diagnostics a little bit in this experience. So what I showed you was this console exe running, which took a blob image and did resize and watermark. When you publish this job as a web job in Azure websites, we basically give you this dashboard experience, which monitors all the jobs that are being executed or all the functions that are being executed. And it gives you very finer level detail on what's happening. So for example, on the left is all the functions that have been registered with all the jobs in the system. So in this example, I'm using a storage account, which I showed you how to put a storage connection string. And I have lots of these jobs created with the same storage account. So in my solution, I have about 6 jobs which are listening to the same storage account. So that's why I have so many functions. And on the right side, it's showing you the last few invocations that happened. So in our case, I just ran the demo of resize and watermark. So that's why it said like resize came up over here and like watermark showed up as well. And if I click on resize, a lot of interesting things are being represented over here. Like it tells me what are the parameters of the resize. It's taking in this blob. I have links where I can open the blob itself. It's telling me how many bytes were read, how much percentage of bytes were read, what was the total time spent in I/O. So if you think about applications which are doing more intensive work, for example, maybe CSV readers or RSS aggregators where you're reading a lot of data and you're writing a lot of data to blob, this in real time will give you what is the progress of your function looks like. And then an interesting aspect is like in our example, like we had image processing which called resize, which called watermark. So there's some chaining happening. And we are representing this chaining in this dashboard as well. So we know that resize is going to call watermark. So we show up watermark over here, and you can click to the watermark function and then see its details, like how many bytes were read, what was total time, and then you can see the input output, and then you can basically visualize like what's happening in your chain. So if you have a chain of like, you know, more than 3 or 4 nodes and one of them failed, you can walk down that graph and you can see why it failed.
And it'd be good to show you could also walk backwards. So you could go to a specific blob. Let's say the watermark was wrong,
right?
A blob is wrong. You could go to that and actually do a lookup and see, well, who wrote this blob? And you'd wind up at a function at a page for the function that wrote it, and you could walk back up the chain, so you can see.
So they can search for blobs.
And then, that's really cool.
Right. So you can do the lookup, and then you know you can go if you click on that guy, you can walk backwards up, and trace up the chain to see who the caller was, and where the bug was. You can go fix that function, upload a new one, and then let it process through your blobs again. So it's almost like an omniscient cloud-based debugger for your distributed app.
I really like this, and one, the UI, I mean, Pranav, I guess I know what you did.
It was Sebastian, actually, who did.
They won't let me show my UI.
Oh, you should have seen. It was actually Bootstrap too, I believe.
Was it black and white?
What was a little ASCII?
So one of my favorite things about the Windows Azure command line tools is the ASCII art. I mean, all the functionality there is awesome as well, but I always make sure I show off the ASCII art. But the cool thing about the WebJobs SDK is not only have you guys went out and made it incredibly simple to go and take things off of storage, put things back into storage without having to write a lot of code, you've actually gone the full mile. And like this full like diagnostic dashboard really, really is a game changer, you know, compared to a lot of things that we've done in the past where, you know, hey, here's how to make it easy, but logging, you know, you still handle yourself. You guys have actually gone through and done an incredible job of instrumenting all of this code, so it's not a black box that people are throwing the things into.
Right.
It's like, we're handling it for you, but here's a great dashboard to go in, and you can actually diagnose everything that's going on with the tools that we're getting.
And that's one of the things that we want to emphasize, is that all the diagnostics, you know, the instrumentation and the perf numbers and the counters and things, you get for free. You didn't have to go and instrument your code or pull down a logging package or twiddle an XML file or enable something. You know, if you look at the code here, that's it.
Yeah.
So really, it's you don't even have to think about it, and then it's there when you want it.
Cool. So you've been running a lot of things locally, and you've kind of been going to the cloud. How would I go and actually publish out one of these applications Like, is there tooling in Visual Studio to do that? Or like we learned last week, do you just have to go and upload the zip?
There is some prototype tooling that is available as an extension that you can download from the V6 gallery through Sidewaffle. So I'll show you that in a bit, like, but I just want to close this thought that Mike mentioned around diagnostics. You know,
cool.
I showed you an example of a job that sort of worked well. Let me show you an example of a job that might fail, and let's see what happens. So I have this job over here, which is going to process some images. Again, it's going to have same flow. It's going to listen to an incoming input on a blob. It's going to call the fizz function is going to get triggered. It's going to do some processing, and it's going to write to a blob. And let's see what happens. So I'm going to go to my same container. I think I have a few images in Squishit input. Perfect. And so I'm going to execute this job. And I want you to closely look at the dashboard itself. So I'm going to try to dock the dashboard on the side. Or actually, I'm going to switch very quickly as soon as I start processing. So Control F5, switch to the dashboard. So this job is starting. executing this program. And so you see like on the console, I'm getting some errors. And in the dashboard as well, I'm getting some errors. So it looks like this job failed. So let's click and see what happened. So the reason this job failed is because the library that I was using to process this image threw an exception, because probably the input image that I had was wrong. But the beauty of this experience is now I'm getting some like errors in real time of what happened with my job. And my job is still executing. It hasn't crashed, it hasn't failed.
Yeah.
Like if I go back to my application, again, I didn't have to write any single line of try catch in my application. Like the framework sort of took care of everything for me. So that's, you know, where we think the beauty of the diagnostic experience really comes in.
That's brilliant. And looking at the console here, I mean, this is automatically updating. So I'm guessing this is going into the website itself, so it's the site extension.
Yes.
And is the site extension leveraging SignalR, or is it like polling?
Not yet.
Okay.
So our goal is we want the entire experience to be real time as well. Right now, only the dashboard front page is in real time and it's using AJAX polling.
Cool.
But you know, everything that happens should be real time itself. And the other thing I wanted to point out is basically, if you toggle output, we are pumping out the standard output console.writeline, any sort of logging that you would have done in your application, and you can see the results right here. And what I'm seeing right now is basically an exception that happened in my application. Like, you know, I called this library, and this is the stack trace that I get.
Love that call stack. Hey, for anyone who's had an exception in a worker role startup,
with zero lines of code,
IntelliTrace is brilliant.
yeah, but this code is running in the cloud, so always keep that in mind. Like, you don't have any VS, you don't have, at some point.
Yeah, this can be really useful post-mortem.
Exactly.
If you've gone and you've run a system and maybe it goes and runs 1,000 functions.
Right.
And a few of them failed, you can go afterwards and see, well, who failed and trace through and get that post-mortem, which means you can also do it in a production environment.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be in staging.
Exactly.
Now this dashboard, because I just thought of something. Is this going to be open sourced, or is this something that it ships as part of the SDK and no one's ever going to see the bits for it?
Eventually, we would like to open source both the SDK and the dashboard itself. Like right now, where we are, like the code is internal to Microsoft.
Okay. Because I just thought of this crazy idea where, you know, the dashboard, someone could go and extend it with Visual Studio Online and start pushing bugs into TFS or work items into TFS whenever
yep.
it hits an extension.
There's a button over here, like.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Fix
this. Yeah. And you can share this URL with different people as well, because like again, it's a unique identifier for this execution of the function.
Yeah, it's like a permalink.
It's a permalink. Yeah.
So you know, imagine here you're on a team, something's failed, you can take the permalink and IM it or chat it or paste it in a bug entry or something to share, hey, this image failed, and someone else can go to the permalink and see, you know, the exact instance, the parameters, you know, they have a lot more information than just when you paste in a call stack.
Right.
To all the QA people out there, thank you.
This is heaven. So that's the aspect of the dashboard I just wanted to show you, like, you know, what happens if a job fails. So let's show you how you can upload a job to Windows Azure websites. So now currently the support that we have is basically you would have to go to your job folders on the under bin debug, and then you would have to upload a zip of your entire content of the debug folder and upload it via the portal. So I'm not going to show you that experience because
we saw it last week.
We saw it earlier as well, and it's boring. But I want to show you is like something that what we think the experience might look like for Visual Studio developers. So in this solution, I'm going to add an ASP.NET project because we think, I think most people will have a mix of web applications and web jobs kind of living together. So I'm going to just create an MVC app. I'm going to say change authentication to no auth. And just create a web application.
Cats and dogs living together in the cloud.
Cats and dogs living together in the cloud.
That's my new tagline for this.
And so I can right click and I can say add. Again, Windows Azure web job. I can select the job that I created. Cool. And I can create two kinds of jobs, continuous or triggered, which basically means like continuous is running always and triggered runs on a schedule. So like every Sunday I want to do some sort of cleanup or some action happens.
Cool. So like you said, this is experimental. This is a prototype of what it could potentially look like.
Exactly.
So for all you viewers out there, there's a comment board below here where you can go and say, you know, I really enjoyed this feedback, and then it gives us a nice centralized place.
Yes.
For you to say how you like the experience, what you would do differently.
Right. So. And I wanted to show you what happened when I built the project. When I added a web job to this web application, we created this folder structure under app data called jobs, continuous, and then the name of my job. Yeah. So that's the folder structure we expect on the server side when we publish the bits to Windows Azure websites. So I'm just going to right click this project. I'm going to say publish Windows Azure websites, create a new site, Corey. Is awesome.
Why, thank you.
With the right name. Let's say create.
That site's not taken yet?
It's mine. It's like
right.
$10,000 now. So I'm going
to
say
remind
next.
Me to register the domain names later.
I'm going to start a preview so we can see what files are going to get published. So you would see this app data structure is going to get maintained. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say publish.
Cool. So this is using the existing publishing.
Exactly.
Like so
the same way I publish my websites, I'm going to publish this site again.
Excellent.
And so if I refresh my website, so what's going to happen is, you know, I should see a new site called Corey is Awesome.
And I'm sad that I'm never going to get that back.
And inside the web jobs, I have this Hello World web jobs, which is now being initialized. It's in a schedule of running continuously. Mm-hmm. Now I have to set. Remember, like when I created the web job, I sort of created these connection strings for my storage accounts in my web job. So I need to create the same connection strings in Windows Azure websites. So I can go back to my Azure websites. I can go to configure. And I can drop down to the connection strings. And I can set these two connection strings itself. So the reason we are setting these connection strings in the Windows Azure websites portal is because, let's say if you have multiple jobs running in the website, then all of them can share the same connection string. Azure jobs data, and save it. And then if I go back to my web jobs,
so does this mean that the SDK is actually looking for the custom connection string underscore whatever you named it there by default?
Yes.
Excellent. Cool, because those app settings, for those that don't know, are actually exposed as environment variables
exactly.
in the Windows Azure website. So
exactly.
That's how it becomes this great spot to just go and put some configuration values in there.
Right.
They get encrypted when they're stored.
Right.
But it's a nice, simple interface for you to go and add in things.
Exactly.
And it takes priority over whatever's in your web config file.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just...
And it's nice then, because then that same set of connection strings flows to both the site extension, the dashboard, as well as your job host constructor that's doing the listening and running and triggers.
Cool.
So I'm going to stop it, and then I'm going to start it. And so it's running continuously. I'm going to refresh the site. The reason I have to refresh the site is because when the job runs and the job is using our SDK, all of the logging links that you get will take you to the dashboard. So it's easier for you to find the dashboard and sort of see what's happening. So if you, so that's, this link would basically take you to this dashboard, which would, again, show you all the functions that you have.
Cool. And one of the cool things as well is if you go into the configuration section of your website, going and turning on remote debugging
right.
will give the ability to do remote debugging against your web jobs.
Exactly.
Or, you know, the diagnostic tracing that's in there.
Yes.
You could actually tail the logs coming out from there as well, which is really, really cool.
Absolutely. So I'm going to show you a few other things about the SDK which are sort of interesting. So I showed you how to do blobs, like how you can bind to blobs. What I showed you in my example of image processing was how do you do custom binding as well. So if you notice in this case, I was not binding to text readers or streams, I was binding to web image. And web image is a custom binder that I've written, which is actually over here. It's a web image binder which binds to web image, which is ships in Plan 9 as a system web pages assembly. And it has some helpers on how you do watermark and resizing. Mm-hmm. But the point I wanted to make was that you can write your own binders and you can do what you want in your own binders itself.
Cool.
Again, just like MVC?
Just like MVC, like in model binding.
That's a reoccurring
theme. That's a good point, actually.
Yes.
Our whole idea behind it is basically as web developers, like there's certain things which we're used to and we're simple and we're nice. So let me show you what happens in queues. You know, queues, again, we can read and write from queues. Here's how I'm listening on this queue called initial order. But what's interesting is instead of strings, I'm binding to a type called order. Mm-hmm. And order is the normal POCO class which I have in my application. I'm not deriving it from any other base class, basically. Yeah. So it's very similar to what you would have in your EF model. So you have your to-do types, you model bind against it, and you save it.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that point, because that was a big deal, that it's your type.
Yeah.
No special interfaces. It's not,
exactly.
It's not polluted with a bunch of attributes, no base class, not even some specific convention you have to follow. It's your model,
right.
your type.
And then you can use your same data annotation attributes to attribute it whatever way you want it to be, and then we'll just basically JSON serialize and deserialize on the queue. And this is an example of, again, you know, goes back to model binding. I'm going to bind to a blob input called order slash, you know, so order slash one. So you can think about your products listing page on MVC controllers, like product slash one will give you the first product. So order slash one could give you the first order in that blob or queues or whatever it could be.
Cool.
And let me show you tables. So we have triggers for both blobs and queues, but tables we do only binding. And let me show you what this program does, and we'll run it. So this is a program which counts in a given sentence the number of words, and then within each word it counts the frequency of each character. And this is an example of a job which can be triggered manually. So if you notice, like in all of my other examples, I was basically calling run and block.
Mm-hmm.
So run and block was an example where I was basically running this job always. So it's going to start the job and keep running. It's like while true.
Yeah.
But this example that I have over here is of I'm directly invoking a function called manual trigger.
Okay, cool.
So it's going to get invoked once. And what this function is going to do is going to log basically, okay, this function was executed at this time and be done with it. But what's interesting is I have this function which is listening on a queue input called text input. So I'm going to write a sentence on the queue. The this function is going to get triggered. It's going to split the message into words. It's going to count the number of words, and it's going to store into Azure Table Storage. So this is the binding for storage. And what I'm binding to is this type called word count, which is, again, defined in my own application. It's my own type, which is basically storing the word and the number of occurrences of that word. And it's this function is going to write each word on a queue called words. So if you notice, I'm doing an enumerable binding, mm-hmm. So which is interesting. Like, I'm writing all the words on a queue by using the syntax. That's it. And I have another function called car frequency, which is going to get triggered.
So just to clarify one thing then. So when that function will run, so this count and split inwards, it will run when a queue message shows up on that first parameter, the queue input.
Correct.
It will bind to this table, and the function implementation can use the table, and then it will emit a bunch of queue messages that will get enqueued into that third parameter. Mm-hmm. And for each item in the IEnumerable, that will become one queue message.
One queue message.
That will go onto that queue.
Perfect.
So just think about the complexity of this operation and like the code that you have to write.
I like having multiple guests on the show because it's like I don't even have to think of the questions anymore. It's like, yeah, let's just point this in.
Quick shout out to your unit testing comment earlier. You know, you look at this is a very unit testable interface. You know, iDictionary, that's very easy to mock. Cloud Table, a little harder to mock.
Right.
You know, same with IEnumerable is easy to mock and to test, whereas Cloud Queue Message and Cloud Queue are much harder interfaces to mock. So you can unit test these functions very, very effectively.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the car frequency is going to take each word on this queue called words, and it's going to just print out the frequency of these words. So let me trigger this function. So I'm going to go to my website, which has all these jobs running in. And I'm going to go to this Web Jobs tab, look for a job called Tables. So if you see the schedule is on demand, because it's not continuous. And I'm going to trigger it. And we should start seeing, some updates happening. So the manual trigger got invoked, then the count and split in words function got invoked. This function, basically, we are seeing that this is a message that came on the queue, and then this function read two rows, and then it wrote the output in Azure Table Storage. And then if I go back to the dashboard, you can see the car frequency was called as well. So for the word hello, here is the occurrences of hello, H-E-L-L-O. And for world, I can get the same frequency as count as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is how tables would work. So an interesting thing basically that I have is also, let's say if you have a very long running function and you're uploading like millions of lines of CSVs into a job. And what happens when this function is running for like 20 hours? So I'm gonna simulate that by putting a while true loop for infinity, basically. So
and the magic of time lapse video.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'm gonna close
and in the
this.
Other oven.
So I'm gonna go to this queue called abort input, and I'm gonna write a message on the queue, which is gonna call this function. And clearly, it's a long running function. Right? I don't think any function can run longer than this. But I digress now.
Well, true plus one.
Let's say, please save me. And I'm going to go back to the dashboard. And then hopefully we should see demo abort being called. Let me make sure that queues are running.
Yeah, and it should be if it's showing up there.
Oh, it's running. It's already running. This is the console out. So basically, what's happening over here is, you know, I'm just doing console.WriteLine in my application, and this is pumping the output on the page.
So and we're capturing the output in real time. So you can see, especially for a long running job, the real time capture there is.
Yeah, and we have some text saying it is automatically refreshed. So don't try refreshing it. But the interesting part is like now we have this abort host button which showed up for this particular job. And the reason it showed up for this job was because we detect it's a long running job. So something bad might have happened. We don't kill it because we don't know if something bad has happened, but we give you an option of killing it if you wanted to.
Cool.
Well, and even to clarify that, so we know that the job is still running because as we run, we maintain a heartbeat. And so we can actually tell the difference between a job that is long running and a job that crashed or was orphaned or something like that. And so we can tell the different things. And so we know it's running, so we'll show you the abort button when it's running. But if it had been orphaned or something else bad had happened, you know, say the machine melted. I mean, it's the cloud. Who knows what happens up there? So we can actually tell you
lightning
the different stages.
Lightning strikes.
And so, you know, that can be a lifesaver when you're trying to diagnose what happened. You know, because when you're... nobody wants to look at a black box and try to guess what's going on. And so here we tell you what's going on. Does it?
So when I hit that abort button, though, what is that actually doing? Is that going and stopping the web job, or are we actually putting something in there that's going to like recycle the host?
So for abort, what we'll do is we'll ultimately, you know, we have some graceful escalations, but worst case scenario, you know, we'll kill the process and reboot the machine. Well, we'll kill the process, and Azure will reboot the machine.
We will reboot.
Yeah. So that gets very useful when you've got, say, some runaway.
Yeah.
Runaway thing, because you can see from the real time stats, you know, maybe it's not behaving the way it's supposed to. Maybe there is an infinite loop there or something. You want to go abort it, fix it, because we'll show you the console output and things to give you a hint.
Exactly.
And then you can go retry it.
Great.
Are you ready for this?
Now I'm intrigued.
So here's a sample app that we wrote. The guy on the team called Victor wrote it, and he called it Fluffy Shuffy. So our whole idea behind this Fluffy Shuffy app is like you can come over here and you can upload a bunch of pictures. And then we'll do some post-processing on these pictures. And we wanted to use this as a sample to see like, you know, how can we monitor these jobs and like, what does the dashboard look like and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to come and upload all these pictures. There are about 106 pictures.
Speaking of that 20-hour long-running job. be pretty quick.
Well, hope so. But the orchestration of this app is basically, I've written an app, you know, where somebody can come upload pictures. When they upload pictures, I upload them to a blob storage. And I write a message on the queue saying, hey, these 106 pictures came, and here's the blob where I wrote them. And as soon as I write the queue message, it's going to trigger a function that we wrote using the SDK, because remember, I showed you all triggers that we have. Yeah. And it's going to pick up this message and say, wow, I have a bunch of pictures to process. The job is going to start executing, the function will start running, and then it's going to bind a resultant image, which is basically a collage of all these images, and I'm going to store it in the blob. So it's all the magic of the triggering and binding is going to come in display, basically.
So the queue message you said actually has, that is 106 photos. So if you start processing this, does the worker know that there's 106 and you're going to fail over and you're going to throw an exception to say, hey, we only got 105 images? Or is that something that I would have to handle in my own application?
You would have to tell the system what's happening. Like,
okay.
So we don't know the number of images, but if the queue would... In the queue message, if you were to write like there are 106 pictures, and in the blob, then we have some checks saying that how many pictures were read or written. Then,
yeah, because
the user can show
code.
Some logging.
So, for example, you might upload the 100 images to blob, and then you might queue a message that says, "Hey, there's 106 images over here. Go process them." Mm-hmm. So, you know, the application can know what how much work there is and handle it accordingly.
So on the right side, I'm showing the dashboard which lists the jobs that are there for this particular application. Like I have two kinds of jobs. One is a create shuffle, which is going to create the shuffle for this particular images. And one is a cleanup function. I think I wanted to point it out was, you see this little icon next to the cleanup function. Mm-hmm. It says like the host is not running. Mm-hmm. And the reason we have this sort of this icon is because it's not running at this point, so it could be because the machine went down, or hey, it might be a triggered job, but it doesn't run always. So some sort of indication of what's happening to your function.
And this is part of the heartbeat that's running that you mentioned earlier. That's how you notify.
Yeah.
Cool.
So as soon as
Someone's
I click,
paying attention.
He's a good student, man.
Yeah.
So as soon as I hit upload, I'm going to write the message on the queue, and then you'll see in real time this dashboard getting updated. So it's processing 106 images and is storing on an Azure Blob storage account.
So you can see the pattern here. You know, the website front end is doing some light work, and that might be from mobile services or from an ASP page. But then the background processing, you know, especially with images, can get very intensive. You know, you've run some facial recognition algorithm or whatever, and you know, something like WebDrop's SDK, you can go.
Please upload a picture of your face to log into our website. That'd be awesome.
So actually, it was the shuffle button which is going to write a message on the queue. So
cool.
And then on the right, you would see that this create shuffle job got updated. Mm-hmm. I can click on it, and you would see this abort host also comes up because we think that it's a long running job.
Yeah, if you have.
And if I refresh this dashboard, so it's still running. 16, 20 seconds. So awesome.
This has really gotten to
complete it
to free up your weekends, because you used to sit at home and make collages all the time, right? But now that you have this sitting in the cloud.
Look at this awesome collage that we just produced with 106 images. And you know, I wrote some. This was the container ID that I wrote, and this was the blob I binded to where I wrote the actual collage. And you know, here's how many bytes were written to this blob itself. Mm-hmm. So you can see us putting more diagnostics around it to sort of improve this experience. And then I can go back to the my fluffy website, and you know, like maybe I have processed about a million images and I want to do some sort of cleanup action on it. So I can go to this cleanup job, mm-hmm. and I can say run once, which is going to trigger the cleanup function, and it's going to start the cleanup function, and in the dashboard, and then you'll see this cleanup function running. It's actually just completed as well.
And that's so fast.
Toggle output. You know, it's basically going and deleting all the old containers that I have in my application.
Cool.
So this is what we think, you know, and a real app would look like, which is here's my front end, it's doing some sort of image processing, and here's my sort of back end dashboard monitoring diagnostic. So I think we feel like when you start developing on this platform, we do believe that this makes it really easy to bring in like Azure concepts and start storing into blobs.
Yeah, and I can't even stress that enough. Like you've gone full cycle, like your own POCO objects, this simple framework that goes over a whole lot of different things, using great features of websites, like actually having a nice portal experience and a site extension. I mean, I don't think I could ask anything more of this. Like, this is a really good end-to-end, and hopefully everyone out there is just, you know, on the edge of their seat, drooling, going, where do I find this? What actually brings me up to my next question is, where would someone go out and get the bits for this?
So everything I've shown you is public. It's in preview, like the WebJobs platform, the WebJobs SDK, but it's publicly available in Windows Azure as of today. I think a great resource to start with is if you go to Scott Hanselman's post on introducing web jobs, it has a link at the very bottom. And the key things I wanted to point out in these links is basically we have a getting started tutorial, mm-hmm. which walks you through a file new project, what NuGet packages do you want to bring in, how do you set your connection strings, how do you upload your web job to Windows Azure websites, and how do you run it. And then we have this samples project on CodePlex. This is the sample project which has all the sources. So you look under the web jobs folder, it has all the samples that we showed you today, like how do you do blobs, how do you do queues, how do you do tables, how do you do a hello world, and it also has the Fluffy Shuffy app that I just showed to you. So all the code is just public.
Cool.
And then, so you know, these are the two areas I would recommend is go to Hanselman's blog, like read through the links, go to the Getting Started tutorial, download the NuGet packages, look at the samples. And then if you have any questions, you can post on Stack Overflow or the Windows Azure forums, and we're sort of actively monitoring the forums as well.
Yeah, like if you have something that's specific to your application where you can leverage this in your own custom handler, look at that, I was paying attention again. Sorry, binder. you can just go out and extend this for your needs, which is really cool. Like that's one point that I didn't bring up earlier, is the extensibility of this as well, and the common paradigm that you're used to from building out MVC applications.
Right.
Like, You guys really thought about this.
Yep.
I really like it. This is awesome.
I mean, my closing statement to you guys would be like, if this is the code that you've been used to writing on processing anything that you want, and you want to use Azure Storage, I mean, this is the SDK for you, because like, you don't have to change how you write your application, or you don't have to change your own types. Like, you don't have to learn about how to read and write from queues or blobs and stuff. The SDK solves all of these problems, and it, diagnostics is, I think, is going to be a killer.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Awesome. Did you have a closing statement?
Pranav said,
well,
I'm still in awe of it.
Awesome. Well, I had a blast today. I hope you guys had a blast today. And I hope everyone out there had a blast. And we'll see you next time here on Webcams TV.